To start, go to http://aka.ms/azure_trial and get a free Windows Azure trial subscription. Log into the portal using the Microsoft account you use to register for the subscription. You can see here a lot of services. In virtual machines, you can see I have a SharePoint server, a SQL server, and a domain controller. I'll create a VM using the gallery. I'll specify a Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 machine. Notice there's also a SharePoint 2013 image available. I'll ignore that image at this stage because I want to show you how to create your own image. You'll be able to take what you learn from image creation for a variety of server types you might want to create in the future. Click the next arrow, and on this page I need to pick the version release date and give the VM a name. I'll call this machine SP Base. Although I'm picking a medium-sized instance here with 3.5 gigs and 2 cores, I know this image will work with a small instance. It just takes longer to initialize, so in the interest of time, I'm using the more powerful server. I then need to choose a username. I can't use administrator or admin. Then set the password and click Next. At this stage, I specify a standalone virtual machine. This will be the first machine in this service, so there is currently no other machine for it to connect to. I need to specify a DNS name which is unique on the internet. For storage, you might want to specify use an automatically generated storage account. I'm going to use one I've already configured. In this case, I put the VM into the North Europe data center, which is located in Dublin, Ireland. Then click Next. I don't worry about availability set, and I click Finish. It now goes through the process of creating the VM. Now, I'm using the magic of video editing, so I'm going to speed that process up a bit. I'm going to connect to it over RDP. I'll save the RDP file to my desktop for convenience in the future. Before using that file, I'll edit a few settings. Username, screen resolution, 1440 by 900. Connect and don't warn me. Allow my hard drive to be seen by the remote machine. And then click Save, and then Connect. Once logged in, the first job is to use Windows Update. This obviously involves a restart, so I'll speed through that part and get back to the desktop of the VM. First job is to configure IE Enhanced Security Configuration, so I can download a SharePoint trial. I can then fire up IE and go to http://aka.ms/sp2010trial, where I can download a trial of SharePoint 2010. I need to log in with a Microsoft account. You can use a Live ID, Outlook.com address, or a Hotmail address. Then the download button is enabled. You'll also be sent a product key to the related email address. Save the download to a convenient location on your hard drive. It'll take a few minutes. Now go to the trial and run the setup program. From here, install the software prerequisites. You might have to go around this loop a few times because sometimes there are dependencies in the wrong order, but eventually they'll all be installed. Now this is all super speeded up, and eventually the Install SharePoint Server link is taken. You need the product key from email. Go through the questions until you're asked to specify a server farm. Install the complete version. When that's complete, make sure you deselect the Run the SharePoint Product Configuration Wizard Now box and click Close. Next, go to http://aka.ms/SharePoint_SP1, which is needed to run SharePoint on SQL Server 2012, and install it. Next, run sysprep at c:\windows/system32/sysprep. The command is sysprep.exe/oobe/generalize/shutdown. It then shuts the machine down. Over in the Azure portal, you can see it's called SP Base, and it's in a stopped state, as expected. This is where I click Capture, which is grayed out when the machine is running. You can see a status message while it captures the machine into an image called, in this case, SP2010Base. When this is done, if I go to create a new machine, you can see in the My Images node There is the image I just created, SP2010 base. To create a virtual network, I first need to create an affinity group. In this case, I'm creating VNetAG, Virtual Network Affinity Group, and placing it into the North Europe Data Center, Dublin. An affinity group is a way to group resources together. Next, I create a virtual network. I call this one SPNet, SharePoint Network, and I use the affinity group I created in Northern Europe. I'm not connecting this virtual network outside of Azure, so I don't need to select point-to-site or site-to-site connectivity. So, on this page, I'll have a network in the 10.0.0.0 address space and a default subnet called Subnet 1, which is the first subnet within that address space. It's mapped to 10.0.0.0. So I've created the virtual network and subnet. An AD domain controller running DNS for all the domain members needs to run in a virtual network. You can't just run it on the standard Azure network because you need to use a specific DNS server for all the domain services instead of the default Azure DNS service. This is fairly straightforward. I pick a Server 2012 image, give it a name, and a small instance is perfectly adequate for this lab. I can't use administrator or admin as a username. On this page, I need to specify a DNS name. All the machines in this SharePoint infrastructure are going to exist within this domain, so it's best not to pick something that represents an individual machine, but rather the entire service. In this case, it's the first machine in the service, so I pick standalone virtual machine, and it ends up with a DNS name. You can see that sp2010.cloudup.net is already taken by some other imaginative fellow, so I'll take the equally imaginative sp2010.plenky.cloudup.net. If this is your first time with Azure VMs, get the system to automatically generate a storage account for you. I'm going to use one I created earlier. This is where I get to pick the virtual network and subnet I created earlier, SPNet and Subnet 1. Notice by default, PowerShell remoting is switched on. It now takes a few minutes to provision the VM. I can see its details in the dashboard view. I'm now going to attach a disk for AD's Directory Information Tree, or DIT. It's recommended practice to have this on a volume other than the volume the operating system is on. Give the file a meaningful name. In this case, it will end up as Drive F in the system. 20 gigabytes is more than adequate for a small system lab like this. It's important to leave the cache to none for a DIT disk. It takes a few minutes to create the disk. Now that it's running, I can connect over RDP. I'll save the RDP file to the desktop and make a few edits, as I did with the previous RDP file for the SharePoint image. Then connect using the credentials I created in the VM setup. In the VM, I need to create a volume from the attached disk, so I initialize the disk and then format it and give it a letter, a drive letter, F, and call the volume ADDIT. Next, I need to add the AD domain services role. I walk through the wizard. It then installs the AD binaries onto the server. Next, I promote this server to a domain controller. In this case, I call the domain plankytronics.com, and it's a brand new forest. I make it into a DNS server as well. The NetBIOS name will be the same as the first element of the domain name. Next, I move the DIT onto the extra volume I created. In this case, everything goes on to Drive F. You get a little collection of warnings, but as long as you only have these three, that's normal. You can ignore the three warnings. Eventually, the machine restarts, and that obviously kicks you out of your RDP session. When it's rebooted, I can log back in over RDP. I just make sure it is indeed running AD. I can see the domain name, plankytronics.com. I can also see that the tools work, AD users and computers. Now I'll look in the network adapter's configuration. Notice it says obtain an IP address automatically. Leave this as it is, even though it contradicts AD best practice. The lease on an Azure Virtual Network DHCP type address is 168 years, so you're guaranteed to always get this address. But the DNS server address needs to be updated accurately. you'll see the first address given to the first machine in a virtual network is always .4 within the subnet your machine is in. So I populate the DNS server address in the network adapter configuration with the same address, the .4. This time, I choose a SQL server from the gallery. I'll put this machine on a medium virtual machine, a medium VM. That's 2 cores and 3.5 gigs of RAM. It does quite happily run on a small instance size, but it'll be faster for me to record this video using this higher power machine. This time, I select connect to an existing virtual machine. The phrase connect to is a bit misleading. What it really means is put this machine into the same service as the other machine and link it to the same DNS name. You can see the previous machine I created and its DNS name. I use that one, sp20planky.cloudapp.net. Also, at this stage, you'll already have an automatically created storage account from the previous VM you created. You might as well use that one. I'm using a storage account I set up previously. I also specify the same virtual network and subnet as the previous machine. I want all these machines to be able to talk to each other in the same domain, so putting them on the same virtual network is important. That'll take a few minutes to build. I now do all that fancy stuff with setting up the RDP icon on my desktop and use it to connect to the VM and log in. While all that's going on, I'll attach a couple of disks, as I did for the AD machine. I'll have drive F for the data and drive G for the logs and backups of SQL Server. You can see here in the dashboard, the first data disk is attached. Now I add drive G, and you can now see in the dashboard I have an extra disk attached. So, back in the VM, I need to initialize those disks and attach drive letters. I make the first one into drive F and give it the label SQL Data, and I make the second one drive G and make the volume label SQL Logs. Now in the file system, I just need to create the folders that SQL will use, data on drive F and logs and backups on drive G. Next, I need to do a bit of setup in SQL Server. First thing is to move the data, logs and backups locations to those folders on drives F and G. It requires a SQL restart for that to work. Next, in SQL Configuration Manager, I need to enable named pipes. Again, a SQL restart is required. Oops, I forgot to answer that dialog. In the Windows firewall, I have to allow port 1433, the SQL port, to allow incoming data, so I create an inbound rule to open that port. Next, I need to set the DNS server address in the network adapter. Remember the AD domain controller's IP address is 10.0.0.4, so I put that into the network adapter. I can now join the domain. With my DNS pointing at the DC, it can find the domain. So I join plankytronics.com, and of course, this requires a reboot. Once rebooted, I log back in over RDP and check that it's a member of the domain, plankytronics.com. In SQL Server Management Studio, find the Logins node and add the administrator account for the domain. In this case, it's plankytronics/planky, and then give them sysadmin rights on the server. This time, I pick the SharePoint 2010 image I just created. I'm also going to make this machine into a medium-sized instance because it makes recording this video faster. But it does run on a small size VM. I'll join it into the same service. I just need to pick any machine from sp20planky. I don't worry about an availability set here, and now I have to wait a few minutes for the machine to provision. Well, while that machine is provisioning, I might as well create the next SharePoint VM for the SharePoint farm. It's the same process again, only this time with a different machine name, sp2. It's now in the process of creating two VMs, SP1 and SP2. These will become the SharePoint server farm. I do the same thing as before to connect to the desktop, editing the RDP file and saving it on the desktop as before. Before I can domain join, I need to set up the DNS server to 10.0.0.4. Then I can go through the domain join process. Obviously, this also involves a reboot. Now I connect to SP2 and do the same things to save the RDP file and get the machine domain joined. Again, a reboot is required. This time, I need to log into Plankytronics/Planky on SP1. I use the SharePoint 2010 Products Configuration Wizard. I click through a few warnings about service restarts so I can create a new server farm. I specify the database server I created earlier and provide some valid credentials, the ones I've used all along, Plankytronics/Planky. SharePoint also requires a passphrase at this step. Make a note of it, you'll need it soon. The configuration takes a few minutes, but in this video, with the magic of editing, it's almost instant. When the farm's configuration wizard fires up, click Cancel. I'm going to do these tasks manually. In Manage Applications, I select Manage Web Applications and create a new app. Set Allow Anonymous Authentication and click OK. When it's created, I can modify the anonymous policy specifying None, no policy. Back in Application Management, I can create a new site collection. In this case, I set the title to My SP Site. I'll make sure in Templates I'm using the Team Site under the Collaboration tab. I set the site admin up to be the user I've used all along, Plankytronics/Planky. When that's done, in theory, I should be able to open up a browser and go to the site. I go to http://sp1/, and if I'm patient, the first time it loads, I'll see the page. I'm logged into AD on the server, so I'm not prompted for credentials, but if I came in from the internet, I'd be asked for credentials. So I click Site Actions, Site Permissions, and set up the site for anonymous access by specifying the entire website. SP2. Now I can get onto SP2 and log into the desktop, remembering to specify the domain in the credentials, Plankytronics/Planky in this case. This is the second server in the farm, so in the configuration wizard, this time I specify connect to an existing farm. I say which server and enter the passphrase, and then it joins the farm. This takes a few minutes. Once it's done, I can cancel out of the configuration wizard and open the site at http://sp2/ to check that the site is working properly, as I did before. In the portal, I go to the endpoint configuration for SP1 and add a new endpoint. I give a name, and then it's important to set both the public and private ports to 80. It takes a few minutes to add the endpoint. You can see in the portal at this stage it's not load balanced. Next, I do the same for SP2, only this time I specify load balance traffic on an existing port and select the endpoint I created for SP1. A few minutes later, the endpoint is created, and this time both endpoints on both SharePoint servers are load balanced. It's actually difficult to prove that load balancing is working because all the content from a SharePoint site comes from the database, which is the same for both servers. However, some of the static images are in the file system of each server. By drilling into the file system of SP1 and modifying the site icon file and adding a number 1 to the image, and then doing exactly the same with SP2, only adding a number 2, when the site is accessed from the internet, in other words, when it's going through the load balancer, you can see which site is delivering the page. In the portal, the DNS name of the service is copyable. If I use it in a different browser tab, you can see the first time I access the site, it's delivered by SP2. When I refresh the page, notice it changes to SP1. You'll notice each refresh doesn't always bounce between the two servers. There's a more complicated load balancing algorithm working than that. But if I refresh a few times, I can see it's load balancing between the two servers. You've just built your first SharePoint pop-up lab. At the moment, popping that lab up and popping it back down again quickly will involve multiple time-consuming steps in the portal. But by using the Azure PowerShell commandlets, you can automate the pop-up and pop-down processes. In most cases, I notice that my SharePoint pop-up lab pops up in about 7 minutes and pops down in about 5 minutes when using PowerShell. Doing this in PowerShell is the subject of the next Pop-Up Labs video.